Professor Lane, Constitution Law, November 21st, Room 238, and the time is 10 o'clock.
Thank you. is where we are? Well, we can do it quickly. A few people, and to work. But I know there's some other people that are upstairs probably screwed up. Including me. For a moment or two. Doesn't look like night's going to come either. It does. So, we're going to look at page 265. Yeah. Right? That's the part we can have. Can I do it? I did that. So, all that is the. Okay. Did we have 15 minutes? Did I do that on Monday? I thought I did. For those of you, we do type versus groups. Sure. Well, I did it for somebody. I had not. You weren't here on Monday night, right? You didn't come back or something. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I think it's a big thing, but it's a balancing test. Right? Not, it's Melons from Arizona. Is he not from heaven? So, South Dakota built a cement. South Dakota is worried about cement. Right? This is Reeves. 1980. And in that case, they don't seem to have sufficient supply of cement.
This has the funniest acoustics.
Is it just down this way, the meter? Is it down this way? Maybe they have a full room, it doesn't matter.
I don't know what it is.
So, decided to build the dome so that. And it does. So, this isn't a license now, right? This isn't Carbone. Come back to Carbone. Remember Carbone? Clarkstown, New York, they put away the transfer station in there. So, and I don't know what mechanism, whether they create an entity called the State of South Dakota Cement Plant Authority. They create a cement plant. And they allow people to come buy it. So you could be from some neighboring state, North Dakota, come and buy it, and maybe whatever made economic sense. I don't know, what's right south Dakota? Or you could be from Minnesota and drive west. What's right below the South Dakota? The plains area. Some other plains states right there. They were not using geography. That's something you have to know. You can look at that. So, now they're in short supply. Okay? And so they, I don't know if it's a law or a rule. Remember, if I talk to you and I say something's a statute, a law, I shouldn't say a law or a rule, because they're the same thing. A regulatory, the product of a regulatory agency, an administrative agency, is a rule. The product of a legislative body is a statute. Both are laws. In case I muck up with the terminology, sometimes I'll say a statute, a law, or a rule. A rule is a law. And a rule and a regulation are the exact same things. There's no difference between a rule and a regulation. The only thing, a statute is a product of a legislative body, a rule or regulation is a product of an administrative body. If it's been paid, if it's properly authorized, it's properly adopted, has the same force of law as a statute. But I'm not sure if your members here whether they. So they stop it. So what happened? What is it?
Well, it's the new law proposed.
Where is it?
In the top of 266.
No, that's a description of a trap case. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'll make a point. I don't care about this case particularly as much as I care about the point, certain margin points. Comes out of this case. So they effectively make a rule or pass a law that's irrelevant to the outcome of this. It says that, and I'm going to short it. It's going to say, we're having a shortage. We're only selling South Dakota purchasers. Okay? Purchasers will be construction companies or cement wholesalers, whomever it is. We're selling it to them. Actually, what they actually do is they they allow contracts that are open to be filled, and they say that all new people have to be South Dakota. We're not going to take any more contracts from them. So they don't cut off existing contracts, which leads you to the different constitutional problems under Article 1 about states' rights to repeat or not under Article 6, states can't repeat a contract. So what they do is they say, henceforth we're only doing dealing with South Dakota, right? So the question becomes, can a state create a cement plant that only does business with other South Dakota entities? So let's go back to the basic question. Can South Dakota pass a bill that says all cement manufactured in cement manufactured in South Dakota can only be sold to South Dakota users. I mean, that's out of the statute. Discriminatory on space, right? Right on space. Basically, discriminatory statute. You do the, you know, you approach it analytically, high level, high burden for the state to justify it, and almost impossible to justify. The only case we ever saw justifying any statute like that is the main vacant issue case. So, what you know it is possible, but does this strike you, you know, only this goes right to, this doesn't go to the question, this could never succeed, because in the main case, the main vacant case, right, their health, environment, safety is the argument. Here, the only argument you make is protecting South Dakota entities. Well, that goes right to the heart of what you're not allowed to do under the Dormant Commerce Clause theory, right? The one thing that the Dormant Commerce Clause exists to do is to block, remember, the fundamental intrastate economic warfare problems that the framers were concerned about. So the one thing you can't do is create tariffs or other kinds of obstacles to a sort of national market. So once you use that as a reason, you can never have that as a reason. That's gone. Right? End of the story, out the window, don't even worry about it. Whatever they're going to say to you, oh, but we need to, we're in a depression. We share our depressions, as you're learning. Right now, you can't, there's no argument about that. So they have to come up with, another argument. And then you do the weighing and the question of, A, is this a valid argument? Some statement, is this the most efficient means? The only efficient, you know, are there more efficient means of, or the statement argument, this is the most efficient means of accomplishing, right? So then you have to do the view. There it is, right? So this, so that example, right, you understand you can't do that. So I can't pass that statute or promulgate the rule that says cement manufactured can't be sold outside the state. But now let me take my cement business that I've created, and they say we're only selling the South Dakotans. So, let me ask you this question. So you'll frame it for yourself. I would say, perfect. We'll understand exactly everything about this issue in 1 minute. I know you're interested. If I start a cement plant in South Dakota myself, I start it myself, right? I run the cement. Can I sell only in South Dakota? Can you even stop me? It's not black or white. It's not disabled, it's not male-female, it's not gay-straight, it's not disabled versus whatever the opposite is, undisabled, non-disabled, whatever. It's not any kind of recognized challenged group. That's what they say. It's simply North Dakota versus South Dakota. So, constitutionally, can I do that? Eric Lane Cement Factory, South Dakota. I'm only selling to South Dakotans. So, it may be the stupidest economic decision I made, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with me doing it unless I run into not a constitutional problem, a statutory problem. And I doubt there can be a statutory problem that says I can't sell it when I want to, unless they're protected classes, which I don't think could make South Dakotans protected. But it's not our issue, right? But you should understand, of course, there are protected classes, so that even though there's nothing constitutionally that would prohibit me from doing something, now, or maybe it's the privilege, and maybe there's something on the privilege of immunity, of course, if I doubt it. I think I would choose to sell it my own. It's not a public space, it's not like a restaurant. Maybe, I don't even know, I don't know what happens in entity agreement, invite the public in as part of your business. there's some other applications. But I want you to sort of get the idea, okay? So now we take this South Dakota governmental entity and say to them they want to just sell it to South Dakota. So they can. And why can they? Well, that's a damn good question. And truthfully, it's a heavily debated question, but so in the world of understanding dormant commerce laws, okay, there is an exception called the market participant exception. And the reason I say, you know, what I'm saying to you about it is because if you take a look at the dissent, it's a 5-4 dissent. What they're saying in the fourth of the dissent are simply saying, this is ridiculous. This is a fake. They're trying to do, you know, they're indirectly doing what they can't directly do. They're ending up providing special treatment to South Dakota. They mean the pronoun was critical, they mean should be it. The government. Now, you can see it from a little bit of another perspective. I mean, you can see it from the same point of view, but let me offer this example to you. In South Dakota, passed a statute for within its budget, provide a subsidy to every person in South Dakota that wants to buy, every company that needs to buy cement, to allow those people to pay more for cement or have more, and they subsidize, you know, the purchases of cement. In other words, putting more money in their pocket so they'll have more access to cement because they can pay higher prices to either South Dakota or North Dakota or Michigan or Minnesota. Cement, and they subsidize their own citizen. We talked about this in the milk deal, right? Because remember, the line seems to be drawn. This line seems to be drawn where you're discriminating at between regulation, where you're actually regulating, and using your own money, for example. Using your own money. Now, if you remember that Creamery case, whatever that was, West Wine or West Creamery, West Lynn, or something. And I asked you the question, okay, money comes in, everybody's taxed, comes into this special fund, comes out, and is only used for subsidizing local milk producers. Comes in from all milk producers who sell milk in Massachusetts in the form of a tax, comes out as a subsidy, and it's one flow, right? So it's like goes in a funnel and comes out one tenth in the sense it goes to the mission. Right? That was considered no good. And then I asked that same day, what if we had a direct subsidy to Massachusetts, whatever it was, milk producers? Right. Now, in many ways, it's the same, you know, if you talked about how you appropriate it goes to the general budget fund and you're competing all the time. And some students say, well, you're competing even under the special fund. Which is true because, of course, there's nothing that would stop the Massachusetts legislature in any year they wanted to just raid that general fund. Okay, so it says milk in that special milk fund now is part of the general fund. Take it. We do that in New York State all the time. We have insurance reserve fund, we have this reserve fund, we have that reserve fund, and it's all earmarked for special use under some special condition. But if it's created statutorily, it can be undone statutorily. This year, for example, there will be one reserve fund that is paying me in the state. It'll suck every dollar into these various, you know, general So, one you can do, one you can't. Now, if you think about it, the one you can't do is this kind of taking from everybody. I actually didn't want to be told. Taking from everybody and giving. Taking from, you know, it looks like a regulatory scheme. Because the money's flow, it's not just the state's money. But what if you had this general tax on anywhere that sold milk in Massachusetts? Assuming you could do that. Everybody paid the same tax. Money went into a general fund, and then every year you appropriated money for the Massachusetts milk producers. It wasn't a special fund. So there was no statute that guaranteed it. It was just an appropriation of money. And in one sense, this is the line that gets drawn, right? In the one sense, the more it's regulatory, the more it looks like influencing your scheme to influence conduct versus the more it looks like a direct sort of part of the political process, you know, subsidy or marketplace, your own funds used for this. We draw some line there. Not a clean line, often. Of course, that's why we always use these hypotheticals and bring you to the edge to make you think about it. You know, in some instances, and not only not a clean line, meaning that you can't always tell whether something is regulatory or marketplace. That's why you apply for the decision here, because four judges don't think it's marketplace, but then by one. Powell, Brennan, White, Stevens, right? And they're basically saying this is a substitution. And the other courts, the other judges are saying, no, this is a special, this is not a regulatory scheme. This is the participation in the market, which is the state's not trying to act like a regulator, the state's trying to be. Now, why should that be an exception, by the way? What's the lot? I mean, who cares what you're trying to act on?
So the state has a responsibility to get their
to make sure that they can kind of approach the market, approach the market, whatever it is, at a fair place. So the intent here is just to help their own citizens, and the outcome may be, on the subsidy, that's good. But here, well, I mean, you're right. That's what the argument is. But so this fulfills, this is more like the state fulfilling its sort of sovereign responsibility than when they make a regulatory scheme that's discriminatory, right? That's what the argument is. Notice how the court breaks down this. When you look at this case and other cases by the state court, the people in the majority, let's use what yours is. Rehnquist and a couple others that are in the majority here are the judges who, remember, they've been dissenting a lot in some of these earlier cases with respect to whether or not something was, the state had a justifiable reason. For example, in New Jersey versus, or Philadelphia versus New Jersey, where they're arguing that, you know, this is not about, this is about protecting the health and environment of the New Jersey citizenry by somehow controlling out-of-state waste. You know, they're in a dissent there because they're favoring state life. They don't like the reach of the Dormant Commerce Clause. And here, that same group of judges is in the affirmative because this is allowing more state, more freedom of state. So a lot of this has to do with a larger vision of the role of states in the society versus a more narrow vision, or, you know, what really is, or, I mean, you know, or it could be, it could also come from some originalist notion of what the framers actually had in mind, I mean, with respect to what the Commerce Clause meant. So Thomas, for example, would never be supportive of any of this because he and Scalia actually don't even think there's a dormant Commerce Clause that have meaning anymore. And so, you know, standard list, they're worried about it, plus nothing the framers would have ever thought about can't be part of our modern jurisprudence because it couldn't be conceived of in the context of the original ideas of the framers, even the framers' understanding of what the national economy would look like, Sapi. This can't be considered discriminatory. They would have a much stronger vision of states' rights, you know, than this would reflect. So you get this mixture that comes in here and starts to say, well, you know, this is acting as a marketplace, it's not acting as a regulator. You know, I don't know, what's the evidence of the marketplace? Do they have to sell at marketplace rate? So, for example, somebody from North Dakota comes in and says, I'll pay you 10% premium to buy it. I can't sell it to you because you're not from South Dakota. I'd love to. I can't sell it to you, right? So if price doesn't influence decision making, are they really a marketplace? Is it really a market exception? Is it really, you know, does it make any sense to market exception? And, you know, you have to say no in one sense, right? Because it's certainly, you know, it's the rare bird that if I went down to a private place and said, I'm going to get a premium for this, that's how the market's supposed to work, right? Scarcity brings, creates inflationary pressure, so I'm willing to pay more for the end of the stuff. So the prices go up, right? You're supposed to sell it at that higher price then. That would be normal human behavior and experience. We know that from experience as well. So the idea that you're participating, in other words, the idea that it's in the marketplace. There's a famous Alaska case that has to do with an Alaskan company. And now, since Alaska has taken on a new meaning in all of our lives, except for those of you who are Rip Van Winkle in the last 4 weeks, from August through Election Day, we know that there's a new meaning in Alaska. But there was a very famous case that comes out of Alaska where some Alaskan controlled owned company, does timbering. So they bring these skidsters in there, all these things, and take the tree cut them, pick them up, put them on the skids, cut their things off underneath, throw them out. And so then they were selling it to Alaskan buyers, middlemen. And they would then demand in the contract that the middlemen would have to process the wood in Alaska. Okay? All wood purchased from this entity has to be processed in Alaska. And the Supreme Court made a determination that in the first part, selling it only to Alaska buyers from this Alaskan timber company, that was marketplace. Requiring the purchasers to sell it, to process it only in Alaska, was regulatory. And you couldn't do that because that was this downstream, they call it downstream control of the use of the product, ended up being regulatory. Now, I know you feel understand what I'm saying. You know, how wood comes to a pile, I come and pick it up, I'm going to be the middleman on it. So I have to take, you know, maybe I want to take it down to the state of Washington. Maybe I want to take it to Canada or something. State of Washington has to be in there. Where are we? And so it's sitting on my big truck, these logs, and under my purchase arrangement, I have to use it bring it to a mill. I have to use an Alaskan mill. Okay? So I can't use another one. Now, that latter condition was seen as regulatory. Selling it only to the Alaskan middleman trucker, whoever was the middleman in these things, was seen as more. So the sale, my original sale in the business, only to Alaska, that was seen as not invoking Mormon commonsense. Selling Alaskan products only to Alaskans. The next step, controlling the downstream step of controlling the processing, was seen as regular. Now you can see why that's seen as regulatory in one sense, right? Because you're saying none of this can leave the state in this form. So I think most judges would agree that was regulatory now. Selling it only to the Alaskan, that seemed more as a market participation, more about the state trying to benefit. But I mean, in both cases, the state's trying to benefit its own citizens. But in the first case, they're giving it, it's almost like a direct subsidy. You have a right to the trees. In the second case, it's stopping people from using the trees in the way they may see fit. So that has to do more with conduct and regulation. Here, the end of Powell said, South Dakota Cement Commission has ordered that in times of shortage, the state convention that must turn away out-of-state customers until all orders from South Dakota are filled. This policy represents precisely the kind of economic protectionism that the Commerce Clause was intended to prevent. Application of the Commerce Clause should turn on the nature of the governmental activity involved. If the public enterprises undertake the integral operation of areas of traditional government functions, citing the case that has now been overturned, the Commerce Clause is not directly relevant. However, the state enters the private market and operates a commercial enterprise for the advantage of its private citizens, it may not be in the constitutional policy against economic balkanization. So let's go back to Carbone. Remember Carbone? Here we are in Clarkstown somewhere out on the other side of the hill. That's a bridge. And Clarkstown wants to get a handle on its rubbish. So they want to create a transfer station like a lot of places have. Towns and counties where stuff is brought in, sorted, recycled, non-recycled, and then taken out. And they create an origination fee that says that everybody has to bring it there. Even if normally somebody's a Clarkstown processor or somebody that processed stuff in Clarkstown, I might have been across the road, but somebody contracted with me to pick up the garbage on, the garbage can outside of the rural area, the plastic thing, and they come to pick it up. And maybe they were taking it to, some other town. If you want to pick up in Clarkstown under this law, you got to stop at that place, pay a tipping fee, then you can take it anywhere you want, but you got to pay. So you're doubling up the cost. So you're forcing them to use the cost now. Now, that's done by a private person. And the theory is that Clarkstown may be able to pay them. And person effectively is paying Clarkstown some amount of money every year until that amount of money equals effectively the amount of money necessary for Clarkstown to obtain for the plant itself, and then it's going to operate at the station plant, transfer station, and the maintenance and compact. Now, let's assume we're now in the sixth year and Clarkstown now owns this. So it's the Clarkstown Transfer Station. And there's a Clarkstown Transfer Station Commission. And that commission passes a rule that says everybody, this wouldn't work. I'm sorry to tell you, I went down the road on this, but I'm just going to see that it won't work. And the reason it won't work, well, I'll go through it, but maybe it will work, and maybe it doesn't work necessarily. Why do I give you this as an exam question? You would understand why, whatever I may be thinking now, I wouldn't be thinking if you were your answers. So, now they own it, and they say, everybody in Clarkstown has to stop. Well, let's say there's a statute passed by the Clarkstown trustees or village government or whatever, whoever, town council. Alright? All garbage picked up in Clarkstown has to first go to the Clarkstown factory. Could you do that? I was thinking that would be an example of something you couldn't do. But you could do, because it was private. But I'm wondering if you could do that. It's not like a company turning you away. It's like, this is more like a regulation. There's a town saying you have to use our facility. I'm not sure if you can do that. Even though the facility is owned by the private party, right? Even though it's owned by the private party, and now it's owned, then it becomes owned by the government. So when the government owns it, if the government refused to take anybody other than Clarkstown people, that would be okay. That's a cement case. But if the government, if the company, so here, let's assume that now that they have a company, they require everybody to go there. Come to the Clarkstown dump, you couldn't go anywhere else. Or you'd have to pay them a fee. Right? Anybody who picks up garbage would have to pay a fee to the Clarkstown government-owned company in order, even if they were picking up the garbage and sending it to a transfer station down the road or another state.
It's one of the big distinctions.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. Well, wait. What is it?
I was just going to say, it sounds a lot like the Alaska case and having and requiring everyone to go there. You're regulating.
Yeah, it's. Well, you're both. So, the reason I'm troubled by my own hypothetical is I started down this downstream path here. The reason I got troubled by it is because what I'm thinking about as I'm telling you this is. If they pass a rule, I don't think that the company itself would have no power to pass any law or rule that says that everybody else has to go there. That has to be the town council. So, it's one thing to say to a business, you have to do what you can, the business can choose to do business only with A, B, or C. That's a business decision, but there's no power that I can imagine that you would create in the Clarkstown dump that they could become a legislative body and tell everybody that comes. So there has to be an above it statute. And I think the statute itself would end up being regulatory. I don't see how you could do the statute in a way. Even though the repository, the depository, I guess, the depository is town owned. The regulation is not town. The regulation itself is government. So I think that one wouldn't work. Now, if you go to the New Jersey Philadelphia case, and New Jersey had owned its own landfills, New Jersey owns all the landfills in New Jersey. Remember when that case is, New Jersey passed a law that says only New Jersey garbage can be dumped in New Jersey landfills. Philadelphia sues, and it's a 5-4 or 6-3 decision. Discriminatory on its face. Health, environmental reasons seem vague to us. Why is outside, you know, outside garbage isn't any dirtier than inside garbage? You're allowed to pass it. Some of you might have seen, you know, you're probably allowed to pass a rule, a law that says we'll only accept garbage with this level of toxicity. I gave that to you in examples. As long as those levels of toxicity, in effect, don't mean it's only New Jersey versus Arizona. But once you say you can't keep New Jersey, only New Jersey garbage, that in it itself can't be a help in environmental basis, because what distinguishes it? And so when they looked at that case, they said there's nothing distinguishes it. Really, it's just rhetoric to cover up a discriminatory statute. Now, if New Jersey owned all of those places, owned their own landfills, and they passed a statute that said, or if they, that you can't, only New Jersey garbage can be dumped from New Jersey owned landfills, that would be all right. That's the marketplace, right? That's New Jersey in the marketplace. They're talking about their own stuff. That's more like the subsidy. I mean, I think you have to sort of get a sense of this. So I'm visual, when I'm articulating this to you, I'm not sure I can visualize this answer. In other words, I can see that it's the New Jersey thing, their own. It's not regulating. It has a regulatory effect. I mean, the effect is regulatory, but it's not a regulatory act. And it's not what makes it not a regulatory act is the fact that it's a New Jersey asset. Okay. So it's interchangeable with subsidizing or something like that. It's more like the use of their own resources. Okay? You clear on that? So take the case in there. I find this thing. Can't even understand this. I'm sorry.
I'm never allowed to say that.
You know, every 32 years of teaching, a bunch of books, lots of bull. I figure I'm confident about the thing. This can't be. All right. I don't want you to struggle trying to feel yourself doing that. That's why I'm doing this. So the case they're using here, very good. Hughes versus Alexander Spratt. I guess it's really, I mean, I probably understand that it's a subsidy case. So here's a case where Maryland wants to clean up its these hulks of cars, like my 1991 GMC Sierra. Which has only 80,000 miles, but almost no body life. I mean, it's rusty now all over the place. And I'm not sure that when it ends its life, I may not just leave it right on the side of the road, but it's going to fall out. You can't do that. But if any of you ever spend time in rural places, and you can go along the sides of roads, people for years, harder now to say, well, these numbers they can find by me. But people as a general matter, since most Americans use second and third and fourth hand cars and have something more bounded, and they will be down in the SPG. But you know, if you go across America, you understand why second hand car business now, we call now prior owned car business. It's a huge business. Most people, sensible economic decision, unless you're a leaser. But for most people, since first minute it's driven 1 mile, it drops almost, you know, a quarter of its price. People buy a tenth by second, you know, a tenth or a tenth for it. Right. And I can sell a light truck tomorrow. A couple thousand bucks.
But when they go, what do you do with them?
I don't know, just get a farm or a yard and leave in the yard. And then just go send them a car in and talk. Or in a hedgerow, they have a farm. I have a friend upstate with this one and sort of elephant car burial yard. They're all stuck in there in a line. Actually, this year, the scrap metal price for a while in China and other places were so high in refined metal that people paid unbelievable amounts of money. So it was worth it to get a ton of truck for trucks. Big container. People could come on the farm with these containers as big as half this room. Just take all the cars and dump them into it, and crash, pull away. So, and you see this in urban, for years you can see this in urban settings all the time. I mean, I remember years ago in Harlem, you can pull different parts from East New York, and you see all the cars sitting done, and then they can almost go by window broken, and they just lose the living. So, now I've got sick of this, and they decided what they're going to do was to offer bounties to processors who were taking Maryland registered cars. And they didn't care at the beginning if you came in from Virginia or where you came from. You processed, you gave them the information that they required, and you would get a check. And then they stopped. Then they started to make it much more difficult for out-of-state processors to get these cars, effectively making the paperwork requirements impossible to satisfy. So some Virginia processors go into the court system and they say, hold on, you're discriminating, favoring the bounty program favors in-staters versus out-of-staters. And the court said, market share. And you can see it in one sense. Case is more confusing than I'm describing, but I'm trying to take like related to a case because it effectively becomes a subsidy. No, all state to do is pay money. But the fact is that you couldn't pass a law that said only processors from New York or Maryland can pick up. We will only here. You couldn't pass it. You can't pass a law that says we will only license scrap metal processors from Maryland, right? Discriminatory case. You could say, okay, well, we have particularly difficult, we want particular kinds of covering. You know, we have safety and issues involved with this. We have real high practice standards. I come back and I say, yeah, but I can, so I can live up to the same standards. I win the case, right? So what does Maryland do? They start to say, we'll give you bounty. But we'll only give the bounty to the Maryland process. They weren't giving it to everything. We'll only give it to the Maryland. So probably what happened was, you know, a bunch of legislators lobbying. They said, you know, it's a lot of that money that you're giving the bounty is going out of state. What's the matter with good old Maryland processes? I wasn't there, but I've been around the government enough to, 90% odds that that's what happened. They started complaining too much money going out of state. So you got money in state, okay. You know, We have good processors. Let's spend the money in the battery at home. They're calling it marketplace in a sense, but you can see it also as a subsidy. It's the use of their own resources. It has to do with them sort of dealing with their own citizenry, not in a regulatory. I mean, it clearly has an irregular, it clearly has a discriminatory effect. It's not passing the law. It's not, it's giving money. And if you're not entirely satisfied with the distinction I'm making, you shouldn't be. Right? Because it's sloppy. Not my way of articulating it. It's not sloppy. Maybe it is, but even if I was articulating it perfectly, it's sloppy, the distinction. And that's why you see these splits that go on the very distinction that we're talking about. You can't really get your hands around it unless you're starting to think of, I'm always looking for more states' rights, and you're always looking for more national control. And then if I explain it in that way, then you can see the tough. I think a little more easily. And remember, when we started reading my book and began this course, to this day, I told you this state, local, state, federal argument continues unabated all the time. A whole different language. Nobody can go back to where it was. Nobody can go back to where it was in 1787 or 1788 unless they're big times like that. You can't even imagine what it was supposed to be in the back. But the tug of the things, it's so many the social management, political, legal fiction. Well, I mean, in effect, they do get around it, but you need to be able to rationalize that. In other words, you have to have an argument that's plausible. Because, you know, Scalia in one of these cases said, you know, the court, unlike the legislature, the court has to be clear, reasoned, and something else. So you can't just simply say, I like states better. Because that's not an acceptable argument. And I'm not sure they would do it themselves. You know, they have the right. But I do think that I mean, there's a tension, right? If you're a state, and sort of think of the state in historical sense, you're the legislature, you're governor of the state, you're natural paid for natural, your instinct is your job is to the state. Not that you don't believe in the United States Constitution and all that, but you know you're governing the state. And when you have a federal system like this, then, like we have, then, you know, this governor of the state of New York is supposed to worry about the state, and the state legislators are supposed to worry about the state, and if there are clashes, there'll be clashes, right? With the federal system. Even though they all think they're a little bit so, thinking about the state leads you to all kinds of actions. That's why you get all these cases. One might be, I want to get this pay about me. I want to, you're always thinking about protectionism in one sense. It's always lurking in your thinking. You wouldn't call it protectionism, you would call it taking care of my state. So, and to say you can't do that, right, would be to say you can't have states. You know, and I think, someone made that point. You know, so in essence, the question becomes, you know, what's the meaning of the state against the federal system? The federal system is existing, it exists. That's the system we have. So there has to be meaning to the state. I mean, more than that, or red and blue, you know, more than we like to have. State has to have some power with respect to the citizen. And so all these cases are where do you draw that line? Every one of these cases, you know, where do you draw that line? And so, and there's always a group of people on the court, you know, depending on, you know, and sort of the American perspective on that varies. It doesn't always vary conservative. I mean, it could. So, for example, you could be a conservative in one sense and always think the state, you know, except when it came to criminal law, then you don't think the state, you know, should act, you know, you're perfectly willing to do a lot more federalizing the criminal law. But putting that aside, you know, because it always hasn't always been conservative, liberal. I mean, the populist Jefferson, very much for states' rights, fearful of the central government, and conservatives, Hamilton, very much in favor of the central government. So, you know, it's hard to get this label. So just think of sort of people that like states for whatever reasons, and are more pro-state, okay? And that runs across the spectrum. And it runs across the spectrum sort of as an instinctive reaction, and then it depends on what issue. So the issues shape that thinking too. But at the bottom of it is, there's, you know, there's no respected position that says the other states. Okay? So there's got to be something there called the state. And what we mean by something there called the state, more the line, that some area in which the state is, some things the state is responsible for in its history, right? As we now know, it is educational, that's been changed a little bit for the first time ever in the political world. Job left behind, family law stuff, law stuff about torts, and, you know, there's areas there, and there's this governance relationship. Now, part of that relationship, obviously, is we want to help our, you know, if Michigan had any money, they'd be trying to pump it into Detroit. Why? Of course they would. Otherwise, what would a state government be like? You know, what would it be like? Right? It'd be meaningless. So, you know, there'd be a lot of pressure, you know, part of the economy. Put some money in there. Do something. They can't do enough. I mean, they're, you know, $25 billion out of Michigan's budget would be probably more than bankrupt. Probably some of the state money. But the point is that, so here we have these situations, each of these situations that we're looking at is some attempt on the part of the state to fulfill its sense of that obligation, and its sense means how the political process works out. So people are lobbying, legislators are responding, executives are responding, state courts are responding, and out of all this comes some action. And then that action gets judged because we have this idea of the Dormant Commerce Clause, which says that even if Congress hasn't spoken about this, even if Congress hasn't said a word, the existence of the Commerce Clause itself, meaning Congress, has a substantive meaning beyond Congress's exercise of power, right? So Congress can exercise power, and then that's it. But even if Congress doesn't exercise it, so you take the other side of my sort of picture of the state, that there is this role of the federal constitution which is intended to have no balkanization of the economy. Okay? And that's an essential aspect of the constitution. Here's what the Dormant Commerce says. It says that that's an essential element, essential substantive element of the United States Constitution, notwithstanding congressional action. Right? That's the Dormant Commerce. That's the meaning of the Dormant Commerce. So, state responsibility to its citizenry, constitutional responsibility to non-Balkanized economy. Boom. Fresh. But where? Well, we know clearly facially discriminatory, or maybe not facially, but in the end discriminatory effect. But what about if the state's entering into the marketplace, spending its money? Playing a market role as opposed to a regulatory role. Purpose? Effect? We don't look at it. We say if it's in the marketplace, we can carve it out. Why? Well, enough judges have over the years said that that's much more like the state subsidizing, providing benefits to its own citizenry, you know, the normal, essential things that the state does. That's why they have that national city speech referred to. Even though that makes it no more. And it's not a good law because under Garcia, the court said, you know, you really have no idea what it means to say in formal traditional governmental things. So it's a moving target. It's a moving, you know, the answer to these questions, that's why there's a lot of these areas that say over and over and over and over and over and over again, we've got it now. Then the argument is more important than the answer, because the answer is not knowable. You can narrow it down, and maybe there are direct precedent that will, after you make your argument to, you know, it gets narrower and narrower, you can interpret it in the outcome, you know, in a hard case. And you should understand why in a hard case you can't get an answer. And the reason is just because these courts are 5-4, 5-4, 5-4, 6-3. Why? Because we're clear on the law, although people now are disagreeing with the Mormon. You know, and the edges were not. There are people who really don't think there should be any market exception, and there are people who don't think there should be any dormant commerce clause. Thomas was not, and that's what he actually said, that the dormant commerce clause is too hard to apply. It's not rational, because we keep, you know, it keeps being fact sensitive and fact specific. So what we're doing is kind of identifying with this, you know, the melon versus this versus that. There's no law. Too much argument, no law. There's no predictable certainty. That's what Thomas and Scalia would say. And you know, some of the more liberal judges are liberal in this kind, or more judges that are more interested in the stronger federal government see all of these things as guises. And that's what you said, to just basically get around the commercials. And then in the middle are most of the rest of the judges that are saying, you know, is this more government doing its job for its own citizens? Is this really a bad effort? Like it might be with the subsidy and appropriation of money and the budget. So in other words, you know, it's hard to say. A bunch of milk dealers and other people, folks, come in and they lobby and for subsidies, and they're opposed by consumers who don't want them to get subsidies, because the subsidies will then drive up the prices. And they have that political debate in the state, and they end up supporting the subsidy. A lot of people say, you know, that's just a good thing. And everybody would say this, actually. You know, that's, even though it has a discriminatory effect, it makes Massachusetts milk more affordable. You know, that's part of the government doing its job in governing its people versus the special scheme, which looks exactly like it's totally just intended to protect the Massachusetts movement process. And so, you know, it's a moving target, but it's one that you understand that. You understand how you want to get into it. You know, sort of the clues or the key words or, you know, how you enter the argument, how you see it. But the outcome is always going to be determined, you know, how unique the case is, how close the call it is, and that includes a bad word. I mean, these are commitments that people have, a vision of the world. So I don't want to suggest that they have a bad mood and fight their husband or wife. Their dog bit or something like that. But I mean, you know, where are they on this? Where are they in the spectrum of, you know, more state rights, more federal, more national power? Where are they? That's the goal. So thank you guys for fine. I mean, so sometimes, you know, there's an institutional issue like it's different. You know, so take, for example, this decision against Portugal in one sense. But take this decision yesterday by this conservative judge to let to order five Algerians out of Guantanamo, sent back to Bosnia where the election came out. There's no evidence against any. In fact, so bad is the evidence. Judge has this sort of sense of institutional obligation to the court. Sees it as a review process issue. It's a prime for a lot of the business, but basically you've got to sort of hone in on the arguments. So you should know everything you need to know about that. You know about the history of it, you know about the patient, men and the genes of America, all this stuff. I mean, you know everything you need to know ever about this tension, and you know it continues to exist, and then it gets worked out in the court system. And actually, you know, I mean, I've had discussions when I worked in the legislature where the question was, were we going to be preempted by the Roman Constitution? So, and oftentimes, we didn't give a damn. We take a shot at it. Why? You know, I'm taxing, when you really, you know, taxing out-of-staters and non-in-staters in ways. And, you know, you start to learn you're out of windows, so you stop because the cost becomes. But in the beginning, you almost always test those cases because you want, because, you know, it's dormant commerce clause. Maybe you can get away with it. Maybe it's a little, why don't we try it this way? Because, you know, they need multiple millions of dollars from the state of New York and somewhere. So you can't try it. I mean, I've been by the state on a variety of occasions, you know, or in my capacity. The council wall or another wall to take a shot at it. Let's try. Let's see what happens. Risk you a little bit. You know, we have to pass a lab test with yourself. You want to be serious about it, but a lot of these times you don't know. And that's true because oftentimes, you know, even where you have not a dormant commerce question, where you have a statutory preempt, you know, you have the argument that they're like a risk in any of these laws where, I mean, there are hundreds of cases on the question of national, on the question of, you know, I've actually litigated a couple or advised on the litigation of a couple of my type of court. On, you know, can you swirl out an exception? It's not preempting. If you want to do something in the city of New York, you know, there's all these kinds of, and you're often, so the reason you get all these cases is just because people are struggling to find a way to accomplish things that they think are going to help their locality or their state, and the precedent against it isn't that clear. We know the arguments. You always know, you know, the supremacy clause, obviously. We know the preempt, we know, you know, the enumerated powers. I know commerce regulation, but I'm thinking it's just the same way. And then you say, okay, is there anything? What would we have to get a court to say? Maybe it is, you know. And then you make an assessment. Okay, so what's the likelihood? You know, and then you fool yourself a lot because you want to bring a case, and you don't fool yourself because you send it out to people who sort of need to try to figure out whether, you know, maybe there's a, but if there's a 40-50% shot, you don't take a shot. Why not? And if there's a 5-10% shot, then you don't want to get into an article, whether it's a section 11 or whatever, you don't want to bring a court to suit. Beyond just penalties, you don't want to hold some of your own sort of morals. Something you would wear to advise some of your actions. Fruit. You know, you have to advise fairly, but, you know, in these cases, always get involved. For example, in New York City, where all the unions are constant, very powerful, and while women do this for other kinds of unions, they want different kinds of benefits, or they want certain non discriminatory things. But whatever the things they want, which they always want. There's frequently assessments that get made about whether they're knocked out by the state labor bills, whether they're knocked out by the federal labor bills, between the state and the locality, and also the
Yes. Is this why the idea of the computer tax is
tax problem is not that, because that's done by the state. It's only internal income tax.
Well,
you mean, oh,
in
New Jersey?
In terms of
New Jersey itself?
Exactly.
I think that you're allowed to tax the line. I think that's when they have held it under illegal.
Well, they don't work it out. I mean, one reason or another, it's struck down on because it's supposed to get the legislature to agree.
I don't know how the tax actually works. There's a, you know, New York wants to impose a tax on. Obviously, you buy goods here, you pay for sales tax. Is there a commuter tax on people who work in New York City?
Okay,
and live in New Jersey.
They have a lot of pain that you're using New York.
Yeah, I forget what they say about that. Well, we don't have a tourist tax like that. We have a hotel tax.
We do.
And we have other taxes on the use itself, but coming in to use it, I don't know that. We have to find that out. And tell them. Toll? That's a compact between them. That both states pass that statute.
Yeah.
But anybody can pay a toll.
Yeah, there's already toll.
As long as New Yorkers aren't, I don't think you're. Now, that one question would be: let's assume we have a toll bridge. Can you create a new toll bridge between us and New Jersey? So, I don't know. Over the Palisades, so below the Tappan Bridge, they're building a new bridge. Goes over New York, but it's, you know, it's a half a mile down the river going to New Jersey. So, well, we couldn't build it. We couldn't land it unless we had a deal. I don't think you could do a toll bridge where New York didn't have to pay and New Jersey did have to pay.
You can do bridges
on the
other way.
Well, but the theory on the one way versus the other way is an efficiency theory. That if you go back, most people go and will come back. So how did you get there in the first place? You're going to pay it one way or the other.
But you can go back.
Yeah, most people don't. I mean, you can do that. You can go over the Willis Avenue Bridge and save yourself whatever the tolls are there. So you can never pay a toll. But you could be in New Jersey, I can never pay that toll too. If you wanted to, or anybody wanted to go over the Third Avenue Bridge, if you are, and avoid the toll. You can go over the Madison Avenue Bridge. You can go across over in Yankee Stadium down on Porter Road, and down on the FDR Drive. And there's a million ways to avoid bridges. They're not statutorily accessible only to the owners. Right? And I don't think that one way that's sufficient. So it's that kind of region. Arizona is one way, right? But
yeah.
Okay. So I actually, the other day, I think in this classroom, was working in the political, you know, Pennsylvania campaign on the Obama side of the campaign. So I came. I went home that night. I came back on Monday to do something. Anyway, I went free, and then I didn't come back. But then I got caught going in on the Olive Tunnels. Okay. See you guys. I'm going to do one other thing. I'm going to stop. Privileges and immunities. Only New Yorkers can work here. So let me ask you this question. The state of New York passed a law that says only residents of New York can work in the state, work for the government. Can the state of New York pass a law that says only New York citizens can work for New York companies? That's number two. Number three, can the state of New York say anybody that contracts for any contract that bids on a New York contract? School authority, you know, any of these things we're building, prisons, roads, all these things that we bid out privately. that they have to have newer employees. 50% newer employees. Now, is that a commerce clause issue? Partly. It's also what we call privileges and immunities. Citizens of one state enjoy all the privileges and immunities of citizens of the nation. There can be some burden on that, right? But, for example, you have to establish some. I mean, so for example, in welfare immunity, you have welfare cases. Did you have to be a citizen of the state for some time? Tried to be a citizen of the state for a couple of years, they were all snapped out too long, for reasonable amount of years. And it was more about finding than it was about establishing a relationship. Voting questions for college students, privileges and immunities, establishes as your residence of your college. You're going to be there 365, you know, you're going to be there for the next 300 days. In those cases, you always get one question. So, excuse me, if you take that, my three hypotheticals under the privilege of immunities was, you can hire, they can make, just think about how you're talking about it in terms of commerce. State does not have to hire people from Massachusetts to work for the state. Now, you can't be excluded if you want to come into the state and say, I now live in the state. But you can have it. And if you think about that in terms of the way we were talking about state and its own citizens versus the marketplace, you can see that. You know, this is privileges and duties. Right? When no state can deny citizens of other states the privileges and duties in that state, or can't. How about honoring gay marriages? Is that different than hiring? Is that, I'm not ready for that. So you can all understand that you can hire, right? To say that you're not dishonoring the privilege and immunities of another citizen in another state by not allowing you to work in your state, work in your government, something that's unimportant. A law that says New York companies can only hire New York employees probably fall into the commerce laws. Sometimes they don't. I'm not big on this. We don't spend a lot of time on it. In materials that I'm not spending a lot of time on it, so don't expect a mean question. Although, if that's your idea, the question on my favor, it's really a stupid question. I didn't know it was in him, obviously. So, I wrote this whole thing about putting the community, and I wrote this up on the YouTube. Or maybe I just said a question mark. So, Dan's over into my class when he comes to this person, into my office. I just read your note. What you, of course, it's privilege of immunity. So I said, well, I told you, I don't care. I didn't give you a privilege of immunity request. Now, you didn't get it right. I just kind of remembered this notion of privileges of immunity out there. And so he comes in, it filters in on you. So this case of Hicklin versus Orbeck on page of. Well, they create a local hire strategy, right? So are they placing citizens with the same, you know, the whole point of privilege and immunity is to place the citizens of each state in the same time. So it's in the same point of the citizens of the other state. Although a problem is raised, no commerce clause tells the act and usually reinforces the relationship of the relationship stems to the common origin, the fourth article of the origin. Although the fact that the state owned resources is destined for interstate commerce does not itself the same state current its own citizens. And the utilization of that resource does inform analysis on the privilege of immunity clause as to the permissibility of discrimination. So what that's telling you, which I know you certainly didn't understand from my speed reading to you, fixing or blah blah blah, what that is telling you, and you underlined it, is there are times when the state can be active in the marketplace, but still violating privileges of immunity. So if that Alaskan marketplace company, the state has one that says that Alaska, cement company can only hire people from South Dakota. Now think about that. They're trying to claim they're in the marketplace. Now, even though they're in the marketplace, they might still not be able to do that because while that would exclude them, keep them out of the commerce place so they could sell anyway, meaning only to South Dakotans, they still might not be allowed to hire only South Dakotans. So it might look like a regulatory statute that says you can only hire people from the state. There you might be, the state government can't pass that rule, so they impose that. Even though it's true that a private company can hire only from the market, as long as it's not discriminatory, because those are the areas that it only applies to the government. But there can be two different considerations. Now, I would say to you that clearly you can't pass a statute that tells state businesses you only have to hire, but that's good. And the question about whether or not you can require a contractor who's bidding on a local a state project to have only New York employers, I would say the answer is no. Then you get into this question, does it make a difference if they're in the marketplace? The same thing, yes, and then those are all over the place. Most people don't try.
What if you can show that the claims from other states would be more costly or less qualified to serve and not take up the job? For example,
you have to say qualified people. Don't hire.
But what if it looks like it's discriminatory? Would you say, you can't hire construction workers from New Jersey, but because the New Jersey workers don't necessarily know the local community or the local New York construction
That might be for contractors. You might be able to force them. It's, you know what that case is like, though? That's that case where you come into the Maryland court and then you have to kill a pilot from Philadelphia. Because they're the only ones that know the way. So
but that's on the commerce clause ground.
So give me your hypothetical again.
If you were trying to put some type of restriction on who you can hire for a non-state government job, just a public state job, because of some reported but not necessarily substantiated superiority.
That actually may get you the commerce problems anyway. Because it gets you into commerce because you're discriminating against workers in another state. It gets you into privilege immunity because it goes to the right of travel, all these kinds of issues that effectively make you stay at home. So, how would you then take your next step?
Well, just if you're trying to make the argument where only a few workers should have a job because of some.
You have to be able to establish the virtue of your claim and that your prohibition was the only way to do it, the least intrusive way to do it. Right? Same test. It always comes back down to the same test. You know, the capacity to make claims to support the eight, even if it's, you always get the right, the state always gets the right to establish an argument because of that, the notion that we have state, right? I mean, that actually is the end, that's why the state always gets it. They have a right to articulate state reasons. Certain state reasons are categorically, presumptively, irrebuttably, presumptively disallowed. You know, 6 months back. It's not a law that says that, but that's the effect of it, and that's when the effect is to protect the economy of the state or the economic interests. Here. Court remand under the, this is on the bottom of 275. Under the privileges and immunity clause, municipal ordinance requiring that at least 40% of the employers, contractors, subtractors, blah, 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 be Camden residents. Justice Rendell, speaking to the court, initially rejected the state Supreme Court's conclusion the clause was inapplicable to the municipal ordinance, which had the same effect. Then he said, of course, And I may be called to a big town of the privileges of the middle. So that is a target for getting no answer. What do I want to say? The fact we have a whole talk about whether they're different or the same, but at the end of the day, you said 40%, you know, what's the state's reason? So you have to have a very powerful reason for the exclusion and proving. So we're here to talk about the proof question. Out of work employees in the city cost the city money. That's that economic work. Forget the city, that's such a safe thing. It's the same thing. Out of work employees in the state cost the state all kinds of money. Workers, you know, all kinds of costs are associated with that, which have nothing to do with the state, you know, with out of the state coffers. Workers comp, unemployment insurance, perhaps Medicaid, Medicare, hospital stuff, all goes toward the food stamps that are the state contribution to stuff that comes out of the state coffers. So, state interests in this kind of an outcome are not simply discriminatory. Favoring the order. They might be able to say the same thing about any statute that discriminates. And again, you know, 40%, 60%, usually these things are not there. Sometimes it's the place where you see it work sometimes is when the entity is a marketplace, and not a regulatory, but a market, state entity, and then you say, well, we're hiring a lot of people. They're allowed to, there's nothing. You know, the more that the entity looks private, the more that they're allowed them to act private. Even though it makes no sense, right? Sometimes. See, when they become market players as opposed to regulators, the reason people don't like that argument is because as market players, they're not playing actually the market. So if a market player is saying, we're only going to hire our own local people, they may not get any market efficiencies that a private company would say, we're going to bring in people who think the most qualified and the cheapest price. Right? You're going to try to merge. What are our needs? And our needs don't mean to protect against unemployment, they may, because we may want to hire local people, less cost, we don't want the area around us blow off or something. But you know what I'm saying? That every one of these businesses that are market businesses that are government run actually have government purpose. as opposed to Mark. They're driven by, there's demands placed on them that are not similar to the demands that are placed on them. In fact, there are ideas that can't be placed on them, right? They can try to all the time, you know. Don't move out of the community. Don't move out of the community. You're leaving people in the community unemployed. If you move out of the community, you're going to pass the statute. So if anybody builds a factory, moves has to disassemble the factory, right? Because you don't want these big, ugly factories that look like these car parks on the side of the road. You see them all around. You know, go ahead and go to the West Belt community. It's gross. Right? So from that entity has no concern about Buffalo when it moves. A New York entity in there would have, you know, I mean, so there are different forces when we even when we characterize these people as market, there are different forces. All right, you got enough. Any of you want, would you reflect on this? Have seen your effect. Now I can get to all of this. Now we're all any questions? I'm going to try to make up a quiz. Not a make up a quiz. Sorry, one more. Review quiz.
Yes, I'm just coming back to you.
No.
It's covered all.
No, because.
Oh, you can't. Were you not there yesterday?
I'm sorry, I'm there.
I think you were saying you weren't there yesterday. Oh, don't give me that honest look on your face. Sorry, okay. What we as a plan decided to do when we had the option was to take a section on executive
record
the first 2 hours of the semester. Okay? I'm going to hurry up. I'm going to have to help with this. Yeah, I mean, it's the way the president does.
Yeah. So it was all plot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that better? By the 18th time, we started to explain to us how we so we can make up things for more.
Thank you.
fucking eat.
I thought he was at the doctor's.
Apparently he's hungry and hungry.
What? Fun.